Okay, yes. I'm not surprised John did go on automatic with the song at the beginning. As he said, we were at a wedding, and I'm actually speaking about a wedding today, so it's very appropriate. We were at a wedding in Portsmouth, and our son was best man, so we were there right to the end. You know how long weddings can be, but it was a lovely, lovely wedding. So we had a conversation in the car on the way back and just said, well, God's going to just give us whatever we need to get through what we need to pass on to you today in worship and in the word. So yeah, we're going to be looking at a wedding. We're going to be looking at a lady called Ruth. We're going to be looking at a lady called Naomi, and we're going to see that that there were struggles in their lives, particularly Naomi. So there are only two books named after women in the Bible, and some people these days would say, well, that's very sexist, but actually it's a miracle that there are two books in the Bible named after women, because when this was initially written, as Kenneth explained on Easter Sunday, you know, when he said about the women who gave testimony, that was a miracle because the testimony of women at that time was not counted, but it's recorded as a proof in the Bible. So, you know, the Bible is not sexist at all. Time and time again, liberty and freedom are brought to women in the Bible, particularly by Jesus. But the story is not just for women. This is not a chick flick, okay? It's not something for the girls. It's very profound for all of us and has so much to say. Now, it's a short book, but to read all of it would take a lot of time. So I'm going to read the first chapter, and then I'm going to read bits of the other chapters and just string it together for you. But obviously, it would be good if you read the whole book yourselves at home. So this is the abridged version. Ruth, has everyone got a Bible who wants one? Everyone got a Bible who wants one? Put your hand up if you want one. We can dig one out from somewhere. Nope? Okay. So Ruth 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah. They went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. She was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there for about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. Then she kissed them goodbye and they wept aloud and said to her, we will go back with you to your people. But Naomi said, return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me. At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her.
But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." Then when Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped arguing. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune on me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. So they get there, and the barley harvest has started. And Naomi asks Ruth, her mother-in-law, "Can I go into the fields to glean?" Now that meant she would follow, as lots of poor people would, she would follow the harvesters, and she would pick up the grain that they dropped. And that's how the poor people got their food. So she says to Naomi, "Can I go and glean? Can I do that?" And Naomi says, "Yeah, do it." It just so happens that she chose the field of a person called Boaz. And he was a guardian redeemer of Naomi's family. Some people call it a kinsman redeemer. That means that those particular people, it's a legal term, guardian redeemer, it means that those people have an obligation to other people in the family to help them at a serious time when they're in difficulty. And Ruth just happens in all the fields around her to choose the field that Boaz owned. And Boaz notices Ruth. We get the idea that she's quite a pretty lady. He definitely notices her. And she finds favour with him because he's heard about what a wonderful heart she's had towards Naomi and how she has stayed with her and shown faithfulness and friendship. And so he's very protective. He's very protective. Chapter 2, verse 8. So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And when you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." And then on to verse 14. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up and don't rebuke her." Now, when Ruth gets home with all this grain, Naomi is mightily impressed. She's just got so much, it's hard to carry. And her mother-in-law asks her, verse 19, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked for is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers." Then Ruth, the Moabite, said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field, you might be harmed. So then the harvest season continues. And I've got some water coming, which is great. So the harvest season goes on and on through the weeks. Thank you, Kat. And then chapter 3, and we'll read in from verse 3 if you're following. One day, Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you where you will be provided for. Now, Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight, he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant, Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family." Now, Boaz is quite pleased, because this is a marriage proposal. And he's already taken a shine to Ruth. And he's not really young, Boaz. He's not the best catch. He's no Hollywood star. But she has come and chosen him to be the person who lifts her out of a bad situation. But he tells her that actually he's second in line as guardian redeemer, as kinsman redeemer. There's someone else who gets first chance to do the redeeming. So he says to Naomi, "I will go and see this other person, see if they want to do the redeeming, and if so, they have to go first." So he does that. He goes and to see if the other person is interested, and he's not. At first he is, because he wants the land. But then he finds out through Boaz that Ruth comes with the land. And even though she's pretty, he knows that that might mess up the line of inheritances in his own family, so he doesn't want to know. He doesn't want to take Ruth as well. So then Boaz, probably very happily, says, "It's okay, I'll do it." And so we have a happy ending that kind of turns a little bit strange at the end. And we'll see why. Chapter 4, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son." And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. And then we end the chapter with a genealogy. And we'll come back to that. Now, I don't have time to unpack this story. There is so much. There are so many sermons in this story. It's really hard to even decide what the main theme is. Is it loyalty? Is the main theme God provides? Is the main theme the power of example? Or is it the importance of being honourable? Is it about friendship? And we know, actually, that Ruth, the name Ruth, means friendship. And there are so many sermons that we get out of this, so many lessons. And actually, the things that I've already mentioned about God providing and loyalty and friendship, they're all very positive things, aren't they? But sometimes we can learn from negatives in life. So I'm going to start off just pinpointing a few negatives that we can learn from. Firstly, this was a hopeless situation. This was a hopeless situation. Now, Naomi was not without resources. She still owned land back in Bethlehem. So I would say they're a family of good standing, financially very stable. They had travelled for food, and they probably had quite a lot of wealth to take with them, because they hadn't had to sell the land, had they, to get by? They hadn't had to sell the land, so they went with other wealth, and they were received as a family of good standing. But here, what we find, even though she's taken wealth with her, it seems like she's probably gone through all of that wealth now, and she's not got the same means. But it's not even about that. What she is losing are basics like food and secure relationships. That's what she's losing. That's what she's lost. She's without her husband. She's without her sons. Everything's gone to ruin. And she's in a situation that's hopeless. The Bible is hard on rich people, isn't it? I've spoken about this recently. Because God knows riches don't do it. At this point, Naomi owned land. What use was that to her? It meant nothing. It didn't secure anything for her, really, not the things that she needed in life. So she wanted family. She wanted belonging. She wanted community. And that was all really hard to achieve at this time in her life. That would only come through connections. It would only come if she had another son, and that's not going to happen. And then it could come through a wife of one of her dead sons. And you think, well, there's the answer then. There's a problem with that. You see, the people of Moab didn't help the Israelites when they came out of Egypt. The Israelites did not like the Moabs, the Moabites. Didn't like them at all. In fact, they had decided that for many generations, about 10 generations, even if Moabites converted to Judaism, they were not allowed to be part of the community. And Ruth's a Moabite. Do you see how impossible it is? Even the normal solution isn't a solution, because of man's decisions about these rules and regulations. So the Bible deals with real situations. It doesn't pretend there are no negatives for people of faith. A second negative is bitterness happens. Struggles with faith happen. That's a negative, isn't it? But we can learn from it. The Bible isn't about fairy tales. It's full of imperfect people. Who's pleased that the Bible is full of imperfect people? Gives us hope, doesn't it? Wouldn't it be awful if the Bible was full of people who never get it wrong? We would feel hopeless. Our situation would feel so hopeless. Loss happens. Loss is hard. Bitterness can set in. What's in a name? Ruth. We know that Ruth meant friend. Naomi is in a really bad place. She wants to change her name when she gets back to her own land. And all the people are going, oh, is that Naomi? Oh, she looks a bit grumpy now. She didn't look like that when she went. She's not happy, is she? You can look at, oh, she's got a face of thunder, that Naomi. She changed. And so she says, don't call me Naomi, because that name means pleasantness. Don't think she looked very pleasant. Call me Mara, and that means bitterness, because God is against me. And you can see what a state she's in. She even encourages her daughter-in-laws to go back to their mothers, okay, but to their pagan gods. She's not even she's only thinking in a practical way now. How can I look after them? Oh, if they go back to their mums, that'll be fine. She's not thinking spiritually anymore. She's had enough of that. God's let her down. She sends them back to their pagan gods. There's a bit of a disconnect going on now between her beliefs up to this point and how she's feeling. She's given up. Response to tragedy and loss can be negative and it can be positive. We always have a choice. So let's think about that. We can either lick our wounds and keep opening them up, or we can work towards recovery. Naomi becomes bitter and her faith wavers, and we can feel for her, can't we? Terrible situation. And in the end, God does provide in this story a future with a family and financial security, but in Naomi's bitterness, he also provides the right person at the right time in Ruth. He provides us with people in difficult times. Do you remember Moses in Exodus 17? He's putting his arms up, and while he's got his arms up, Joshua is fighting the Amalekites, and they're doing okay. When he puts his arms up, so what do? They lift his arms, okay? When Moses' hands grew tired, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. Aaron and Hur held his hands up, one on one side, one on the other. It's a beautiful picture of working together with God's leading, isn't it? And here, up to this point, you know, probably Naomi has done a lot of the leading, and now it's turning round. Naomi is bitter, tired, and feels hopeless. Ruth's response. She responds with faith and passion. She's really excited because she discovered the real God through living with Naomi. But now the tables turn, and she's filled with faith and passion. She's determined to follow God. And she responds in a practical way. First of all, she listens. She listens to other people. She listens to Naomi, because Naomi knows more than she does. And so in chapter 3, verse 5, she says, "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. And actually, at this point in the story, you can see that Naomi is thawing a little bit, isn't she? From her frostiness, because she's actually starting to make a plan with Ruth. And all of a sudden, maybe it's the encouragement of Ruth. And sometimes we don't have the faith ourselves for something, but the faith of someone else just encourages us to keep on. And maybe it's that. I think by this point in the story, she's already thought, oh, that's very handy that Ruth was gleaning in Boaz's field. And so she's probably starting to join dots about God's goodness in that. So perhaps she's starting to regain some faith. And also Ruth is bold enough to act. Chapter 3, verse 7, when Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. She pops a question. This is total submission. The Bible often speaks about a cloak as a protection, a covering. It's not seduction, as some people have said. For a start, there are other men sleeping there. Remember, Naomi says to her, "Note where he's lying." She didn't want her to go and lie at the feet of another man. That would have been a bit of a hitch, wouldn't it? So she doesn't wake him up. She's not trying to win him with her beauty, and she doesn't even wake him up. He wakes up with a jolt and suddenly finds a woman there. And yes, of course she's got perfume on. Of course she's got her best dress on. She wants him to like her enough to marry her. We were at this wedding yesterday. There were many girls and men, actually. very dressed up. And at the after-do, you could tell that the couples who were together were very together. And they looked their best for each other. And the singles were trying to look their best just in case something happened for them. They dressed up. So that's what she was doing. She was trying to present the best her to get this marriage proposal accepted. So just some quick points. Because we're getting towards the biggest positives of all. Firstly, we learn through this story that God is in charge, but that our decisions matter. It's amazing that Almighty God wants to work in partnership with us. So our decisions do matter. And sometimes when we're in a bad situation, we can respond with our head, and then we can make very hard and cold decisions. Sometimes we respond with our heart, which sounds good, doesn't it? But sometimes that can lead to just wrong decisions too, because we get a bit too unhelpfully passionate about something. But the kind of leading that God can really work with in us is when we're led by the Holy Spirit, because we're on his page then. We're reading on the same page. So God is in charge, but our decisions matter. Secondly, God uses little things to achieve great purposes. And they can be as little as picking up the leftovers in a field. And God can change that and use that into something really big. He can use the mundane for something fantastic. Thirdly, God prepares a way in advance. So that his plans succeed. Long before Ruth was born, things were put in place for this moment. Ruth was a descendant of Lot, Abraham's nephew, and therefore she was a Gentile. Boaz was the son of Rahab, a prostitute, and a Canaanite, which may account for the fact that he wasn't so hardline about considering marrying a Moabite. Okay, he'd got a very mixed past as well. And so it's amazing that God puts all these things in place. Nothing is wasted. God's love for the Gentiles was obvious even back then. It wasn't just something that was revealed to Peter in the New Testament. And then, fourthly, God protects, even when we haven't been aware of the dangers. Sometimes, you know, there are dangers that we face that we don't even know about. And we concentrate on things that happen to us and we don't like, and we think, why didn't God protect me from that? But actually, there are loads of things happening that God is protecting you from all the time. You just don't know. It reminds me of when my son was about 7 or 8, we were in church and he was doodling. And it was a strange picture. There were two pictures, and one was a man with a target on him. And then next to it, another man with a target on him. And there were arrows going into one, and the other one, there were sort of hands, I think it was hands going like that. And I said, what's that picture? And he said to me, this is when God isn't helping you, when the arrows hit you, and this is when God is. And God is protecting us all the time. God is protecting us all the time. We just don't know it. Naomi and Ruth were quite naive, really. It was hazardous going into fields with a load of men. So it was quite naive. But even then, even before Naomi twigged, which she does in chapter 2, verse 22, she says, it will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field, you might be harmed. So she suddenly thought, oh, this is quite dangerous, isn't it? But Boaz was already putting protection in place. And ultimately, lastly, the biggest positive is that this story gives us a preview of Christ. This is a great love story and it points towards the guardian redeemer, the kinsman redeemer. Boaz is not just a man. He's a prophetic symbol. We see that God is concerned about the salvation of all people, regardless of race, nationality, gender, or status. We see that in the genealogy at the end, that really weird ending. Because we see that Ruth and Boaz were the great grandparents of David. God works through all people to achieve his purposes. Even the son of a prostitute and a Gentile woman who shouldn't be acceptable to a Jewish community. So God has a redeemer in place. I just want to say this in closing. Do you need to ask for advice like Ruth had to and follow something someone else tells you? Do you need to act like she did with the marriage proposal? Is there a situation you need to act in? So many questions. Are you bitter? Do you want to work towards recovery? Do you need to trust that there is a bigger picture? There's always a bigger picture. God is always working towards a bigger picture. Or are you aware for the first time that you are in a hopeless situation as a lost sinner and that you need a kinsman redeemer? You need a guardian redeemer. In Bethlehem, God put a redeemer in place for Ruth. Sometime later, in Bethlehem, God put a redeemer in place for you. Because the Bible is full of incredible patterns of saving grace.